It's time for Microbrew Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. On the other line is Todd Rosiak. It's been a very fun week of Brewers baseball for Brewers fans anyway. Certainly the Brewers going 5-1, sweeping the New York Mets, winning 2 of 3 against the St. Louis Cardinals. Some just tremendous moments. And Todd, I wanted to speak all about it. Got an interview with one of the guys who authored one of those great moments, Bryce Terang, at probably midway through this episode. We'll chat with Bryce. He of course, had the grand slam on the home opener, which was pretty special moment as the Brewers defeated the Mets 10-0. Todd, just in general, this has been a crazy week, but the theme has kind of been the same thing that it was that first series in Chicago. It's the kids. It's these young players. Bryce Terang had that moment that we just talked about. Garrett Mitchell hits a walk-off home run. Joey Weimer has his first home run, has made multiple exciting plays in the outfield, and another good one Sunday as the Brewers took the series against St. Louis. So they've talked about this, the sort of like injection of enthusiasm that comes from just having younger guys on this team, but the vibes around this team, Todd, are not what I expected them to be. This is significantly more juice for this team than what we had in 2021. I feel like that Mets series, every one of those games would have been one of the greatest moments of the 20, or I said 21, but one of the greatest moments of the 2022 season if it had been played last year. It's just been a fun ride. I mean, is this sustainable? The kids, like, are we gonna run into a wall at some point, or like what temperature are you at with these guys and what they've brought to the Milwaukee Brewers thus far?
Well, let's rewind, JR. I was told after game one the Brewers were going to be 0-162.
Yeah, yes. There's always a few alarmists out there, yes.
A few, yeah.
Well, through the first 16 innings, I wasn't sure they were going to even score a run this year, let alone have a win.
Well, look at what happened. Isn't that crazy?
It is
baseball
crazy.
Baseball happened.
Indeed.
but yeah, I mean, it's the young guys have been incredible. It's been interesting listening to the veterans, you know, bring up these young kids without even being asked, and mentioning the enthusiasm and the juice that they brought to the clubhouse and certainly on the field. It's added a whole different dimension to this team, and aside from the enthusiasm and that juice, you hear the term speed.
I mean,
simply, you know, they've added a facet on the field that the Brewers really had been lacking. And it wasn't as big a deal before the rules changes, because nobody really stole, you know, there were not really many teams that were super aggressive on the base pass. But now you have three guys in this lineup, and Garrett Mitchell, Bryce Terang, and Joey Weimer, who all have incredible wheels. And you get those guys toward the bottom of the lineup, any one of those guys or more get on, and then you flip that lineup over to the top. You've got ducks on the pond, as they say, runners in scoring position. It becomes a whole different ball game. And you've seen over the first nine games, really the last seven games, if you take out those first two in Chicago where the scoring was, you know, minimal, just what a difference it makes. And beyond that, excuse me, just the effect of manufacturing runs, small ball, you know, fans that have been crying for that since 2019, really, you know, you're seeing it on a regular basis. You're seeing timely hits. You're seeing guys hitting behind runners, guys who are willing to square around and bunt, guys who are taking the extra base, just doing all the little things that it takes to win ball games, and not necessarily relying on the home run ball, although they have hit some of those as well. So it's just been really refreshing to see just a totally, totally different team offensively than it has been for the last several seasons. And of course, you have a long, long way to go, but the early returns are certainly encouraging.
Brewers offense has been hammering the ball. Brewers bullpen is on a 23-inning scoreless streak. They've been unstoppable to start the year. Starting pitching, a little hit and miss in terms of, you know, Corbin Burnes and Eric Lauer have had a couple rough outings, but Brandon Woodruff and Freddy Peralta have been spot on. Peralta was brilliant for the second start of the year on Sunday. I mean, a lot of things are going well. But I am just fascinated with these young players. I mean, Joey Weimer in particular is a guy who wasn't on the opening day roster. You know, it was kind of a last second, probably the last guy who got sent down. And then there's this freak injury to Luis Arias. It ends up opening up a spot for Weimer. And you know, you talked about that speed. I mean, he's built like a tank, Joey Weimer is. But people know about him is his prodigious power. But then you see him, you know, the big, huge guy, able to move down, you know, move to first base and force bad throws and beat out infield singles and turn singles into doubles. Like, we've already seen that from him. And obviously, we've seen some pretty good defenses. Well, made a diving catch in center. He can play center field. Has made a couple great plays in right field. Throughout my guy, Daniel Vogelbach, trying to stretch a single into a double in the home opener, which was, quite honestly, one of my favorite plays of the week. I mean, not because of the throw, but because I love seeing Daniel Vogelbach going all out. Love that guy. But the Weimer's interesting to me because I'm wondering if he's going to be here all year. Tyrone Taylor has a little miniature setback with his injury situation, so we don't know exactly when Tyrone Taylor is going to be ready to go. It's probably not until May at the earliest, maybe slightly earlier, probably a little later. I don't know if Joey Weimer is going to be the guy who has to go down in that case. I mean, it obviously depends a little bit on his production, but you know, I feel like he's got to be here. He's just brings so much to the table. That defense is so good, and that speed is so good. And there's power, and there's going to be some plate discipline issues. But I feel like he's kind of at the point now where he should work through that at the major league level. Do you see him as a guy who's going to be up and down a little bit, or is he a guy who's here to stay?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question, and one that I think is, you know, as Tyrone Taylor gets closer to health, it's obviously going to be asked. But you know, you bring up two very important facets of Joey Weimer's game, the speed and the defense, that really have been great stories here in the early going. He is a beast of a physical specimen, really, just a big guy, and a guy that's that tall and, you know, put together like he is. You don't expect him to be able to run like he can, but he can run. And he's like Garrett Mitchell. When he hits the ball on the ground, I mean, these infielders, the pressure is on to field that ball cleanly and make a strong, accurate throw over there. Otherwise, these guys are going to beat it out. And to have, you know, I mean, really three of those guys in the lineup, with, you know, including Terang as well, although I would say he's probably not quite as fast as those other two. It, again, just adds a different facet to the team and to the lineup. And defensively, it seems like almost every game, Joey Weimer is making some sort of catch. Today on Sunday, he made that nice running catch heading toward the corner in right field in the ninth inning to record that first out for Devin Williams. Mm-hmm. You know, thinking back to last year, does Hunter Renfroe make that catch? I don't know.
Yeah,
possible,
I don't
either. but maybe not. So I feel like we still have not really seen even close to what Joey Weimer can do scratching the surface offensively. You know, he did hit that home run and it was impressive. It was opposite field, never really even extended his arms. To me, that just showed the tremendous strength he has as well. But most of what he's been doing, he's been kind of, you know, stoinking the ball, hitting the ball on the ground, beating some out. The game Sunday, he had his 7-game hitting streak snapped. But was able to get on base once anyway and extend that on base streak. So again, that's a good thing. I don't have to make those decisions. Guys that are getting paid much more money to make those decisions have to make the call on that. But I haven't seen anything thus far to tell me that, you know, Joey Weimer is not equipped to do this over the long haul or you know, deserves to be sent down. We'll see what happens. And that, you know, saying all that, what happens with Sal Frelick? You know, does he wind up in this numbers crunch not getting a call up simply because Joey Weimer and Garrett Mitchell are playing so well? It's a nice problem to have. I mean, not from Sal Frelick's point of view, if that's what it turns out to be, but you know, who knows, maybe Tyrone Taylor has another sort of setback. We certainly wouldn't wish that on him because he's talented as well, but you know, the Brewers certainly are dealing from a position of strength right now, looks like, in the outfield, whereas just a month ago you were wondering what the heck they were going to do.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the weakest link in the early going is Christian Yelich, and now he had a great day on Sunday, 3 hits and a home run, his first of the year. But you got to laugh that, I mean, would they be better off with Sal Frelick? Now, we're talking about the smallest, tiniest of samples, and we'll talk a little more about Yelich a little later on, but And Terang, you know, it's Terang hasn't pounded the ball all week long. He did, of course, have a really nice start. His defense at second base is so smooth. And you know, I think maybe I was kind of listening to somebody talk about how with the shift being banned, it really does put more defensively on the second baseman. Typically, the shortstop is the guy who moves over if there is a left-handed pull hitter. He's the guy who's going to be there in the outfield, and you know, the second baseman just doesn't have to do as much. You need a sure-handed second baseman. Colton Wong had that in his, you know, on his career resume, but last year was a tough year for him defensively, and now they've got a guy who I think looks very, very comfortable out there, Bryce Terang. And man, that grand slam was just something else. You know, I had a chance to talk to his parents afterwards. We put video of that up at jsonline.com. If you missed that, his father was a Major League Baseball player, comes from a very, very athletic family, and is just has been a great story. And I guess I'd ask the same question of him. I think with their vote of confidence of putting Bryce Terang on the opening day roster tells me that they expect him to be their everyday second baseman for the most part. Certainly against regular right-handed pitching. I think what we've seen so far is he can handle this level. He's certainly not been daunted in the early going. And I feel like, you know, it's the same thing. Like when they need a roster spot, I guess I kind of always thought in the back of my mind it would probably be a young player like Terang. I don't know if that's the case anymore. I feel like this is a guy who is going to be here all year long. What have you seen so far from Bryce Terang?
Yeah, again, you mentioned the defense. And to me, that two things really stand out to me. Number one, he has not looked overmatched at the plate.
No.
He's a guy who looks like he's going to be very adept at making contact, and he will hit the occasional home run. He has that, you know, that again, that element of speed from the left side of the plate. But beyond that, defensively, as you mentioned, he's very smooth at second base. Just watching him, he gobbles everything up. He's a longer, I don't think there's any question, more athletic second baseman than Colton Wong was. And that's not a knock on Colton Wong, because this is a guy that had, you know, multiple gold gloves during his time with the Cardinals, certainly took a step back defensively last year, and you know, obviously has the pedigree there over the long term. But Terang, everything that he does is so smooth. His turns with Willy Adames are really a thing of beauty to watch, the way he gets the ball over there. The way he turns it himself and the range that he has out there, it's really something to watch. So I feel like he can over time be an impact player defensively, and we'll see about the bat, you know, how that holds up long term. And I think with all these guys, you know, it's only natural to expect some struggles along the way. Garrett Mitchell, of course, in his small sample size last year, he had the strikeout issues. I'm sure Joey Weimer, Bryce Terang are going to go through those same kinds of growing pains. Garrett Mitchell may as well again this year too. And if they wind up getting into too deep a hole, then maybe that's the time where you pull the plug and you say, hey, let's send you down to Nashville, get you some more regular at bats, get your confidence back, work on your mechanics, and then we'll see about bringing you back up. And maybe that's when Sal Frelick gets the call. Who knows? But, you know, as far as the outfielders go, but, you know, just these three guys, again, you can't say enough about what they've brought to the table, what they've done, what roles they've played in helping the Brewers out to this, 7-2 record, which, by the way, is best in the National League as of Sunday night.
That's right. Only the undefeated Rays ahead of them, although there might be another American League team with just two losses, but best record in the National League. I did get a chance to sit down with Bryce Terang, so let me play that interview for you right now. It's not terribly long, but got a chance to catch up with him after he hit that big grand slam, and we talked about his power development. He's not known as a power hitter, but he did hit 13 home runs last year in Nashville, which was way more than any other year that he had in the power department. So talked to him about that and his a lot of other stuff from his background, his family, his time on a reality show when he was about 5 or 6 years old. So give a listen to that, and we'll be right back. My guest is Bryce Terang, second baseman for the Milwaukee Brewers. Of course, he hit the big grand slam in the home opener. He's had a very good start to his major league career. But I'm going to go back a little bit. We're going to start with you being, I think, 5 or 6 years old to a reality television show that your family was a part of. I think a lot of people know that your family, big-time athletes, but then you guys were also on a show called Meet Mr. Mom. I think it was on NBC. I don't know if you remember anything from that. I'd be curious to know what you remember from that, how you guys got involved with that. It was kind of a competition show. There was kind of this conceit where the mom goes away and the dad has to raise the family for a little bit. So what do you remember from that experience?
The only thing I really remember is just like watching it mostly. Just
yeah.
Watch, 'cause I didn't really understand what was going on, but watching it after it aired, and as I got older, kind of more understanding kind of what happened. It was actually pretty fun.
Yeah.
From what I remember, we did like a fashion show and garage sale and all this crazy stuff. But yeah, it was a good time.
So I can't find tape of that online. You're saying though there is tape of it. You've seen it and maybe still even have it, that it exists?
I've seen it. I don't remember where I've seen it, but I have definitely watched it.
All right. So you're kind of in a reality show now with this show that the Brewers are doing, the Freshmen, looking at you and a few of the other guys. Joey Weimer's in that group. How is that? What has that experience been like? I know, like MLB.com has asked you guys about it, but you know, you're mic'd up all the time. I don't know if that's intrusive. It's a little like Hard Knocks, I guess. So give me your your takeaways from doing something like this.
Yeah, it was good. Getting to know us outside of the field, kind of how we interact with people. I think it's great for the fans to be able to watch and just see how we talk to each other and how we enjoy each other.
Yeah,
it's been great. So
there's also that video clip of you getting the news from Craig Counsell that you're headed to Milwaukee on opening day. He says you've been optioned to Chicago. I want to know what's going through your head in that moment, because I feel like that wasn't I didn't get it right away. I was watching it exactly what he was saying. I don't know if you thought, because you heard the word optioned, that you were not in fact going to Milwaukee. How did that play out in your mind?
I mean, it took me a second to understand what happened, and then after I understand it, I was just lost for words. I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to do. I just, I don't know. It was just crazy, man.
Yeah. All right, go back in time a little bit now. I'm in 2013. I talked to your parents after the home opener, and they said that you were there in the stands when Oklahoma won the Softball College World Series. Your sister, Brianna's on that team, outfielder on that team. One of the best teams in softball history at the time. I know they lost in 2012, so I don't know if you were there for that one. I imagine that was kind of heartbreaking, and then you come back in 13. They said you were painted up in the stands, cheering it on. What do you recall from that experience? Because that had to be pretty cool for you.
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, it's awesome seeing my sister do her thing and watching my sisters just in general, whether it's winning the World Series or them just playing.
Yeah.
Was always fun for me. I always enjoy watching my sisters, and I wish I could go back and watch them again, but
yeah.
The time's passed, and I enjoyed it. It was a good time, and those girls are good athletes, so it's always fun.
Did you guys go to like Utah and stuff to watch?
Watch
soccer?
I've watched all my sisters play their sports in college.
Awesome. So you guys, you were moving around a lot then as you were growing up to watch some games. Where does the number zero, where did that come from? Was that something that had special meaning to you, or is that just assigned to you? What's the story there?
No, I mean, my favorite number is two.
Okay.
And Urias has two.
Yep.
And I just like zero, I guess. I don't know. There's no, like, real meaning behind it.
Sure.
I just liked it, and now we're wearing it, and so.
I heard that you're a pretty good bowler. Is that accurate, or am I making that up?
I'm all right. I'm not,
all right.
Like, great. Like, but I could bowl a little bit.
All right. You're probably the best bowler on the team, right?
I have no idea.
Yeah, you probably have no idea yet.
Idea.
All right. What's an average? If you're a league bowler, what's a good Bryce Terang average?
An average?
Yeah, like what would be your league average? Oh, I mean, are we talking?
I mean, I've had some
200 plus.
I've had some bad ones, but I'm up there.
All right.
Probably 170, 180.
All right, not bad. That's good.
I've gotten up to high 200s.
Perfect. That's great.
Yeah.
I know that it doesn't – I'm imagining there wasn't much of a chance once you were drafted in the first round that you would go to LSU. But I don't know that for sure. I mean, I know your dad obviously played in the big leagues. He was drafted, had a chance to then go to school and turn that down and try again. How close was it? Was there any opportunity for you to do that? I mean, obviously the path worked out that you took, but do you ever look back on that decision?
No, I'm here now. I don't like looking back at what could have been.
Sure.
I'm here now, and just playing here is awesome. I'm grateful for the opportunity, and that's all you can ask for.
Sure.
So.
All right, I will ask about the Grand Slam. Just power development in general. I know people know about your glove. They know about your speed, defense. The power did pop last year, 13 homers in Nashville, and you know, one presumes it's still getting there. Do you Do you feel like that's a part of your game that you are getting better at, that will be something that shows up here, or is that not something that worries you at all?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm on the thinner side and people can see it. But as I've gotten older, I've gotten stronger, and just the experiences and learning how to get the head out and get the ball more out in front. And obviously, as you get older, you get stronger. I haven't changed much. Just I knew I had it. I've had it since I was younger.
Sure.
It was just when I was going to tap into it.
All right. I mean,
there's still more to come. Just trying to focus on hitting balls harder.
Sure. Where's that baseball going to go?
What?
The baseball from the Grand Slam.
My parents currently have it. They're going to take it home. I got nowhere to put it right now.
No.
So they'll probably stay at their house until I get my own house.
All right.
I already have one, but until I get my
permanent house. Sure. All right. Thank you so much, sir. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Let's shift now to the veterans, the guys that that the Brewers have been counting on, namely the starting pitching has been pretty good. You know, Brandon Woodruff has been awesome in two starts. Freddie Peralta has been awesome in two starts. The Brewers have won all those games that they have pitched. And especially with Peralta, that's very encouraging. A guy who had kind of a star-crossed 2022 season. He has come back and looked very, very good. And I got to think the Brewers are thrilled with that. And on the other side of the coin, you got Corbin Burnes, who, oddly enough, with this team off to a 7-2 start, Corbin Burnes has been a little uneven. He pitched in the regular season opener in Chicago, lost that game 4-0. There's nothing Burnes could have done. His offense got him no runs. They did bail him out and got him a win in his second start, but he was a little uneven. So you could touch on Woodruff and Peralta. I'm sure we'll have plenty more to say about them eventually, but the Burnes stuff, two starts, obviously does not a season make. He started slow before. This is not an emergency, but a little different than what we're used to with him. Is there any red flag going off for you yet? Any alarm bell with what you've seen out of Corbin Burnes?
Nah, way too early to panic on him. You know, he got off to a slow start again last year. You know, I think it's just a matter of him really kind of fine tuning and dialing stuff in. You know, his spring was okay, nothing tremendous. He did have a kind of a shaky outing that last time out. So, having watched him, everybody's seen him enough. Everybody knows how diligent he is in his work, in his prep, you know, his video stuff, everything. I would be stunned if he didn't come out in his next start here in Arizona coming up and not throw the ball really well. And this is going to be, it looks like not the, you know, the typical Diamondbacks walkover team that we've been used to seeing over the last couple of years. This is a pretty young, exciting team in its own right too. So, you know, Corbin's certainly going to have his work cut out for him down there. But again, just too much of a track record there, way too talented a pitcher to look at this as more than just a blip on the radar screen. You know, if in 2 weeks we're talking, you know, he's 0-4 or, you know, he's pitched poorly in, you know, four or five straight outings, then maybe we're onto something here. But again, very small sample size. A guy with a long, long track record, former Cy Young, in my opinion, absolutely nothing to be concerned about in the least.
Sticking with pitching, we found out that Aaron Ashby is not going to be back in May. He's going to hopefully be back at some point this season, but that's not a given. He did have arthroscopic surgery on Friday. The shoulder issues that he was experiencing, the inflammation just was not going away. They tried to sort of rehab through that without having to go under the knife. Unfortunately, that was not something they were able to do. So Ashby out for a long period of time. We've talked a little bit about his role not being necessarily certain. He's probably his injury issues, I have to think, played a little into the decision to sign Wade Miley a little bit later on in the offseason to get a left-handed starter into that rotation. But Ashby could be a starter, could be a reliever. In any event, he was a big piece of the Brewers' future. And now this is going to be essentially a lost year for him, even if he is able to come back at the very end. How do you think about that? I think, you know, the Brewers, they don't have a lot of pitching and depth in their minor league system. A lot of, you know, they've got a lot of these hitters that we've talked about. Some of them are on the team now, on the big league team. But the pitching is, you know, it's not really there. If they need extra starters, it's going to kind of have to come from their major league depth, with the possible exception, maybe like Robert Gosser, or, you know, somebody that might pop up out of nowhere that we're not, you know, Carlos Rodriguez, somebody that we're not necessarily thinking about as a major leaguer at this point. So Ashby's a pretty big loss. It's not gonna matter in the short term, but I worry about maybe the long term. How do you look at this situation and kind of where are you at with Aaron Ashby and what he's facing?
Yeah, to me the Ashby situation is disappointing from the perspective of the Brewers bullpen. Barring any sort of long term injury to one of the five guys that made the rotation coming out of spring training. I think Aaron Ashby would have been a terrific arm in the bullpen, at least this season. Kind of a nasty late-inning guy, late-inning bridge to Devin Williams in the ninth, a guy that could also give you some length as well. But, this is an injury. Whenever you hear about guys having shoulder problems, especially as young as Ashby is and having signed that long-term extension, does make you nervous a little bit because, there's no guarantees that this is going to heal up or, he's going to come back and have, even a modicum of the success that people had expected out of him. I think that, there's a lot more uncertainty than there is maybe from a Tommy John surgery from the standpoint of there right. is such a, there's such a track record. And we've seen so many guys come back from Tommy John now. You pretty much know it's going to be a 12 to 13 month process. But once those guys are cleared to come back, they're as strong, if not stronger than before. The shoulder always seems to be a little bit more of a kind of a hit and miss type thing. So, the Brewers will spare no expense and pull out all the stops as far as getting, Ashby back as far as rehab goes. The medical care he'll get is top notch. And talking to Matt Arnold today, just kind of in the aftermath of that surgery, he said Ashby's in good spirits and really is motivated to work hard and to try to get back by September. And if they are able to get him back and he's able to pitch, I mean, you would think that would be another tremendous addition for a team that I'm sure everybody is hoping is going to be deep in the hunt there, either if not to win the Central Division title, clinch a wild card spot. So, unfortunate injuries do happen and we'll see how he responds to it.
Meanwhile, the bullpen is absolutely on one. This is it's just way too small a sample to draw any conclusions, but I think it's just Brewers fans should just enjoy the ride. 23 scoreless innings to start this thing. You've got Gus Varland, the Rule 5 guy, looking very, very good. That guy, he's got to stay on the team all year if the Brewers are going to keep him. And at this point, the way he's thrown, not only will he stay on the Major League roster all year, but they're going to keep him on the Major League roster next year. Usually Rule 5 guys, they do end up getting sent down then for some seasoning after that. This guy looks like a Major League, electric Major League reliever. Peter Strzelecki's been very good. Hobie Milner with two incredible escape jobs. Or I guess on the homestand, earlier in the homestand, it was just a five-out performance. It wasn't necessarily a big escape, but massive performance from him, and then he escapes for the Brewers on Sunday, getting out of a bases-loaded jam. He's been so good. I mean, they could not have asked for more, right? Like, this is just truly top line crazy stuff. They've gotten lucky a little bit, and I think if probably Matt Bush and Javi Guerra have had a couple hiccups here and there, but this is honestly, I expected the bullpen to be a flat out weak link for this team, and so again, 23 innings tells you nothing. But at some point, it's like, wow, maybe they knew what they were talking about. Todd, what has struck you about this bullpen?
I'm as surprised as everybody else. I think maybe we overlooked some of the guys coming back that were, trying to build off of good years last year. You mentioned Hobie Milner before. That's a guy that he's a definition of unsung hero, guy that really, bounced around, cup of coffee here, cup of coffee there prior to his Brewers tenure. Bounced back and forth between Nashville and Milwaukee his first part of his Brewers tenure. And now, not only is he the only lefty in the bullpen, but really one of Craig Counsell's most reliable guys and a guy who can come in pretty much in any situation and perform. Today was no small feat either, coming in and cleaning up the rest of Matt Bush's mess that could have been pretty crazy there in that eighth inning. Had he not been able to finish that off. So Peter Strzelecki, another guy who just to me, he's the Jake Cousins of 2021. Young guy with really no experience until last year. Comes in, surprises, and this year already thrown into some tough situations, and he's put up nothing but zeros across the board. So they're getting, inning really quality innings, really quality appearances from a few guys left over from last year. And then you've just got some new names, some guys popping in here and there. Joel Piamps, Bryce Wilson, guys like that. You mentioned Gus Varland, Javi Guerra. Really, everybody's done it. Now, is that going to last over the course of the season? Of course not. Everybody's going to have their hiccups, and I certainly would expect the Brewers to fully take advantage of the guys that they do have flexibility with as far as minor league options, because you do have guys in the minor leagues who are going to get an opportunity. Cousins is one of those guys, I'm sure. And then you've got another guy in the 40-man who I think many people are curious to see, Cam Robinson, a guy who has not yet debuted with the Brewers, but has some good stuff and had a really good year last year at Nashville. So there's a number of names. And then you're not even factoring in injuries either. You know, there's going to be injuries as well. So we'll see a bunch of different faces kind of cycling through there over the course of the season. The Brewers did also trade for a left-hander on Sunday, Bennett Souza from the Cincinnati Reds. So they've got another guy in the mix who has minor league options. I would expect we would see him probably at some point. He got a little bit of taste of the major league last year with the Chicago White Sox. So we'll see, but so far so good. I certainly would subscribe to the theory that the bullpen has overachieved and surprised and then some over the course of this first week plus of the season. We'll see how long it lasts from here.
23 and a third scoreless innings going back over the last week. That is really crazy stuff. Okay, so Christian Yelich, he had a good day Sunday. Drove the ball pretty well on a home run and got on base a few times, three hits. But more of the same that we have seen from him, and that is hitting the ball hard, but hitting it on the ground, striking out quite a bit early on in the season, and really struggling with pitches that are just right there in the zone, like swinging right through pitches that are kind of middle in or just a little bit elevated, and that is I'm sure discouraging for Brewers fans who are constantly on the lookout for that turning point where you could see a little more from Christian Yelich. He did, I think, and we've talked about this, his 2022 season was ultimately fine. It was not MVP standards, everyone knows that, but it was okay. He was one of their best offensive players, and so far this year he has struggled. Now, Craig Counsell, if you approach Craig Counsell with a question about lineup, you can prepare to be verbally dressed down. Like, he does not want to talk about where guys hit in the batting order. He does not suffer such things. But Yelich is the leadoff hitter or the number three hitter, and those are obviously two very important spots in the lineup. And I don't know if there's ever going to be a thought of moving him down, if the contract is always going to have just too much input there, or where what they think they can do to try to jumpstart him. Again, we're talking about a first week. I realize that first 10 games of the season, 9 games of the season. So I'm aware of that too. But this does date back now a few years for Yelich. As you watch him, do you feel like that there will be a point where that conversation has to happen, or is it just impossible? Like, Christian Yelich is one of the faces of this team and will be, and that's going to rise above whatever production level he's giving you. I mean, and heck, maybe Sunday's the turning point where none of this matters and he ends up being one of their best offensive players again. But what are your thoughts as you ruminate on what Christian Yelich has brought to the table thus far?
Yeah, I just don't foresee a scenario, knowing Counsell and having covered him for the entirety of his tenure as manager. I do not see a scenario where Christian Yelich does not hit in the upper third of the lineup, barring some just drastic turn of events. Craig Counsell believes in him too much, and you mentioned the contract piece. The Brewers have so much money tied up in him that I think it's going to be somewhere in that leadoff spot, third spot. Maybe at some point he gets dropped down to fifth or something, but I just do not foresee what many fans have been calling for, which is a drop to the lower part of the order.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's a realistic possibility. And the best that I think the Brewers can hope for right now is the hope that he kind of takes off from here a little bit. He has been on base every game so far this season.
Yep.
I know it's not much to hang your hat on.
No, but he's there.
Because Brewers fans want to see him start driving the ball with more authority. more regularity. But, you know, you got to get on base. That's the name of the game. So he's done that. He's hitting 5 of the 9 games so far. The homer's a good sign. The 3 hits today, good sign. Let's see what he does on the road trip.
All right, let's go into some of the more granular details from this week. Some of the quotes, the stats, the fun things that stuck out to us, fun plays. It is 3 up, 3 down. Max Scherzer in 2015, I think, threw the greatest game in American Family Field history. A one hitter, he allowed 1 walk, 16 strikeouts. Last year, Max Scherzer with the Mets came in and came off the injured list and threw 6 perfect innings, just right off the shelf, 6 perfect innings. They had to pull him because he was on a pitch count coming off of an injury, but honestly, that game could have gone the distance. He was just, again, extremely special. He does not have problems pitching at American Family Field. He is an awesome, awesome pitcher, and yet somehow on Tuesday, the Brewers went back to back to back off of Max Scherzer. That blows my mind. Rowdy Tellez went first. Brian Anderson, Garrett Mitchell, 3 consecutive homers. The Brewers rough up Scherzer, win 9-0. The ultimate you cannot predict baseball moment for me this week was seeing this team just continue to pound the baseball against Max Scherzer. Of course, the next inning against a reliever, Anderson and Mitchell went back to back again, which I believe is the first time in Major League history that that's happened, where you've had a back to back to back followed by a back to back featuring, you know, this is getting some gymnastics required for the stat, but two of the guys that were involved in the first trio of homers going back to back, but still, like, just a wild game for me. I did not ever expect to see anything like that in my lifetime with Max Scherzer pitching against the Brewers. So a wild home run frenzy. That is how I kick off 3 up, 3 down.
Yeah, and you were the first one I was going to bring up, and you mentioned it briefly before, but the Bryce Turang Grand Slam against the Mets, you were there right there alongside me. We witnessed that together, and what a crazy moment. You know, his folks in the stands, we saw the replay of his mom crying and, you know, everybody all happy and everything, and him pumping his fists as he came around first base. You know, it gave him obviously a really big cushion in that game, and, you know, did it propel him to a win? Probably not, but just a terrific moment for a kid who, I've brought it up many times before, but this is a kid who's done it really the right way. He was a first round pick. He got a huge signing bonus to sign with the Brewers back in 2018 rather than going to LSU, and he stopped at every rung on the minor league ladder along the way and just got a little bit better, got a little bit better, got a little bit better, had his best year to date last year in Nashville at the highest level. And look what he's doing now. He's been an impact player since the season has started. And for his parents to be able to witness that career moment in person, how cool is that?
Yeah, and I think if you've seen interviews with him or heard this interview on this podcast, you could probably tell he's a very laid back guy. He doesn't have a lot to say. He's pretty chill. You didn't. The emotion he showed on that was already for people who have spent any time around him already kind of like, wow, like that was really special, because he just doesn't react like that. You know, he's just not that kind of go crazy, pump your fist kind of guy. So already as you know, as short as his career has been, you could tell that was just a hugely meaningful moment to him. Of course it was. And a wild game, that 10-0 game. You know, I should have mentioned with all my back to backs that the Brewers have a new celebration for home runs. That is a cheese head, which players have worn in the dugout after hitting one. Multiple players now have partaken in that. Of course, Garrett Mitchell with the cheese head and the game winning home run on Wednesday, a 7-6 win against the Mets, having to rally from 6-4 down. Mitchell sends everybody home happy. He ends up hitting 3 home runs over the course of 2 days. It was really like a course of like 36 hours. I don't even know what exactly it would have been, but it was the night game into the day game. And Mitchell had a very funny post-game press conference moment where he basically said, oh, when my wife doesn't show up, great things happen, and she's not here today. And Haley Cruz Mitchell, his wife, former softball player, has a very prominent social media presence. She had some very funny things to say, like, oh, he doesn't say that to my face. And, you know, there was some really funny back and forth that went on there. And just another lighthearted moment. Again, like, and I said this before, but I think it was Kurt Hoke who pointed this out to me. Any one of those Mets games would have been one of the, like, 3 to 5 best moments of the 2022 season. They just did not have games like this. And so a truly wild series, this home opening series. Like, I don't think, I mean, I could go back in time and look, but I just can't imagine there's a home opening series that could replicate what we had with the first 3 games this year. And Garrett Mitchell's walk-off was definitely a fantastic grace note on a very good 3-game stretch.
Yeah, and sticking with Mitchell, you know, I asked Craig Counsell about this the other day. You know, we know about Garrett Mitchell's speed. We know about his throwing arm. What we didn't know about was what kind of power he has. And I don't necessarily think he's going to be a power hitter in the major leagues, but clearly he is a guy who is capable of hitting the ball over the fence. And, you know, we talked a lot about his type 1 diabetes being a big reason why he dropped. You know, talent wise, he should have been, he was a top 5 pick in the 2020 draft, I would say. And that's kind of what he was projected as. But teams were nervous about the diabetes. Teams were also nervous about the fact that he did not hit a lot of homers at UCLA. And I specifically remember asking him the night the Brewers drafted him, you know, why he was not able to hit as many homers as maybe some people had thought he should. And he was just, he said, basically, you know, my coach had me hitting leadoff here. He wanted me just to use my speed. I had the ability to hit the ball out of the park. You know, clearly we've seen that. So if you can add even a semi-consistent power stroke to Garrett Mitchell's game, along with all the other parts that he has, and whoa, Nelly, I mean, you could have a really, really good player for a long period of time in him.
Yeah, like Craig Counsell said, he hits the ball hard. It's not always up elevated, but he hits it hard. And when you hit it hard, that means it's in there, that you are capable of hitting the ball hard and up into the air and over the wall. That's exactly what we saw here in the first 10 days of the season with Garrett Mitchell. Okay, so my last one comes from Saturday night's game. Hello, long, long lines to get into the stadium for this Giannis City Connect basketball jersey. This was an absolute home run giveaway offering from the Milwaukee Brewers to start the year. We have not seen that in recent years, and it goes back to the vibes and the juice that I've been talking about. You know, bobbleheads are still something that move the needle, but not necessarily to the degree that you're going to sell out the stadium. We didn't see that last year. Nothing sold out the stadium. So they had this giveaway. It was you know, City Connect colors. They had the City Connect colors on Friday night, and then Giannis, of course, who everyone knows is, you know, Bucks great team owner, owns a small stake in this team, and they had this basketball jersey giveaway, and oh my goodness, it was crazy. I had family members trying to get into the stadium. They got in line an hour before first pitch. They did not get a jersey. There were only 30,000 of them. They went. It said very clearly they'd go to the first 30,000 who checked into the ballpark. They unfortunately did not get one. They're fine with it personally, but like, that just kind of speaks to the frenzy that was going on around that ballpark. A sellout night, and the Brewers did not play well in that game. Lost 6-0 to the Cardinals, but they're not all going to be winners. And just again, like a sign of where this team is, they're not last year's team. They've got a new energy, and there is still interest in this baseball team. It may feel like it's declining, but they still have that a little bit. And I think as the summer goes on, if this team keeps winning, we're going to see more and more of this. We're going to see some really full ballparks. And that was interesting. I'm sure it was very frustrating for the people who wanted those jerseys and wanted to get into the ballpark on this particular night. But it might ultimately be a good sign for this team going forward.
Yeah, and building off that a little bit, I think it was just really important for the Brewers. The Brewers, to me, did exactly what they needed to do coming out of spring training, which is get off to a good start, get the fans feeling good about the team, because we've talked about it before, just the negativity around the team, really since the Josh Hader trade. Mm-hmm. It was very toxic. Everything that went on, you know, the narrative that Mark Adonazio is not spending money, the cost-cutting trades that they made, you know, the narrative about Council maybe not coming back after this year, you know, the public money for the ballpark. There's just so much negativity swirling around this team. And then they get shut out on opening day, and you're like, oh, boy, here we go. This is just more of the same. But quickly they flip the switch, and all of a sudden fans are really hyped, really excited. The young guys are playing well. Everything is really, you know, kind of hitting on all cylinders. This is exactly what this franchise needed to do. And, you know, whether they want to admit it or not, I'm sure the upper management and field management of the Brewers are all kind of, you know, giving quiet sighs of relief, like, oof, man, you know, we kind of dodged a bullet here. So again, long season, but I don't think you can overestimate you know, how big it was for the Brewers to get off to the solid start. Now, in another week, we could be having a different conversation because this is going to be a tough road trip coming up, and I'll finish off with that in a little bit. But for right now, I think it's you know, certainly been a great start to the season for the Brewers.
Yeah, you talked about Arizona. They're going there. They're going to San Diego to see Josh Hader and a very good Padres team, and closing down with a set in Seattle. Jared Kelenic, former Waukesha West standout, will be presumably with Seattle. So a lot to follow. West Coast road trips, no fun. No fun at any point in the year. But yeah, we could see how far that momentum carries them. That does it for 3 Up, 3 Down. A couple honorable mentions. Brian Anderson, who can play two positions very well, apparently, right field and third base. He made some good plays in both spots this week. Also hit 3 home runs, had a very good start offensively. Loved William Contreras's phantom throw around the diamond after the Brewers got a pitch clock strikeout against Mark Canha of the Mets in one of those Mets games. That was the first one, the home opener. Just a moment of levity where he throws a fake baseball down to third base. And I think that's it. I mentioned Hobie Milner already having a really good start to his year. So that'll do it for 3 Up, 3 Down. Now let's go back in time a little bit. It's Remember When. My chance to revisit some Brewers history. I'm sure this is the week where we could go back to 1987 and Easter Sunday, I suppose. Joey Weimer had that hitting streak that you're talking about to start his career, same length as BJ Surhoff that year in 87. So I will refrain. I'm going doing something a little more off the cuff. There was an interesting moment in the home opener that national media kind of got their hands on, which was that there was a B-1 bomber that flew over the Brewers Stadium, American Family Field, and the roof was closed. So, of course, there was a little bit of light ribbing, like, oh, ha-ha, they had a flyover and the roof was closed. I would personally point out that probably a third of the fans were not in the stadium yet. When the third might be too many, but plenty of people were still outside when that plane flew overhead. You could hear it. You could see it on the video board. And furthermore, this has happened before. It's a couple Super Bowls, including the one that the Packers won a couple years ago. There was a flyover in Dallas over the stadium. The roof was closed. It does happen. This plane was coming from South Dakota, so I don't know if there was necessarily time to call it off. There probably was, but I wrote about that a little bit at jsonline.com and some of the perceived consequences, not very dire, but it did bring me back to a moment on July 4th, 2001, a little bit of possibly greater consequence of something coming from the sky. This, of course, is the first season of American Family Field, and they had some parachutists that were coming in for sort of celebrating the 4th of July, first season at the new stadium at Miller Park, and a guy named Rolf Henderson from Delafield. He was he's part of the Sky Knights Sports Parachute Club of East Troy. He descended through the retractable roof and landed on a beam next to the right field lights. He was several feet off the ground. I shouldn't laugh because the guy did get hurt. He was 170 feet off the ground. Paramedics had to get him down, transport him to the hospital. He had a broken ankle and a bruised wrist. There were four parachutists. Two landed fine. One landed at the Old County Stadium site way off the, I mean, he was fine, but he was nowhere near his landing site. And you had a guy who did get stuck in the stadium briefly. It's easy to forget kind of how cursed people felt about this stadium. There's obviously a lot of tragedy around it, around the construction of it. The famous crane collapse that delayed its opening by a year, killed three people, three workers. The roof leaking was a big deal. Grass had to be resodded. There was a game against Kansas City that had to be rescheduled because of a power failure. Some people got stuck in an elevator. There were speaking of vibes, they were not good around the new construction initially. A lot of that stuff got cleaned up. The stadium has obviously made great strides. I know that constant improvement for the stadium has been in the news and our news pages that we've written about at jsonline.com. But I just was thinking back to this parachuting moment that I don't know if people really remember, but much worse than a flyover that only certain fans got to see, the fans that were outside the stadium. Just something that just a quirky little piece of history. I'm sure the Brewers don't love this particular piece of history, but it ended well. Everybody was fine ultimately. Just a little bit of July 4th celebration gone wrong. All right, let's close it down, Todd, with your this is how we close down every episode. It's with Todd's take of the week. Take it home, Todd.
Ryan Braun sends it to left center and deep.
Well, you kind of stole my thunder a little bit, to JR. My take was just going to be how not crucial this upcoming road trip is going to be, but what a measuring stick I think this road trip is going to be. And I think we're going to be able to tell a little bit more with a little bit more certainty what to expect in the coming weeks and months ahead, because I've mentioned it before, the Arizona Diamondbacks look to be much improved. They've got a really nice young core of talent down there. And from Arizona, you go to San Diego, which we all know what they have done over the last year, and the kind of the dynasty that they're trying to build down there as well. And I would certainly expect to see Josh Hader probably a few times in the series, and that's going to make for some really interesting matchups against some of his former teammates. And we'll see if we can't steal a moment or two with Josh before one of the games to see what he has to say about facing his old team again and his old teammates and his old skipper and everything. And then the road trip concludes in Seattle. First time the Brewers have been up there in a while. And, you mentioned Kelenic. We'll see old friend Colton Wong up there as well.
Yeah.
This will be a return to Seattle for Jesse Winker, which I don't necessarily think it's going to be a particularly pleasant one for him. Maybe that will motivate him a little bit. He's off to a great start as well. Maybe he can come up with a big series there and show them what they're missing too. So, and then beyond all that, we just got the late West Coast starts too. So everybody rest up and get sleep in a little bit if you can, so you can stay up and watch these games. I'm sure they're going to be enjoyable and not much fun for our deadlines, but we'll certainly get as much up as we can on JS Online like we always do.
Yeah, I'm sure the Brewers don't love this, the fact that they are off to such a good start, and now they have to go on a three-city road trip, though, to the West Coast. 10-game road trip, so yep. That could potentially cut into their early success, and no one's going to be able to watch because everyone's going to be asleep. So that is tough, but they will come back after that. They might get Adrian Hauser back for that next homestand. On the other side, we'll have to see where Tyrone Taylor's health is at. So, that could be some new elements as well. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of Microbrew. Thanks for tuning in this week. It is a fun time to be following the Milwaukee Brewers. You can follow us, of course, much more closely at jsonline.com. We've got all kinds of stuff. Todd will be on the road. His colleague Kurt Hoge will be on the road reporting back and following these 10 games here on the West Coast. Todd, thank you for joining us, my friend.
JR, always a pleasure.
Indeed it is. We can be found at Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all the usual places. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Talk to you again next week. Bye-bye.